Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Gestapo Spencer Williams.
So terrible to me all the dang time.
I couldn't think of anything else that would actually tie into the film. We are not alone this week. We actually have an added bonus, an added person to the show, and that is host of the Dame Patrol and participant, one of the co-hosts of Capeless Crusaders, Miss Amy LaBelle.
Guten Tag, mein Herrs.
She's the enemy.
I just said hello.
See,
sirs.
He makes everyone
you
his enemy.
You can't be the Gestapo. That's like the secret police. You come to hurt people. Well, that is not nice.
We're going to be talking about Jojo Rabbit tonight, so stick around as we talk about that and get into the conversation. And we brought Amy along because Amy also has seen the film and has a few thoughts of her own.
Hopefully.
So, Spence, take it away.
The Filmlosophers podcast has trained with the brightest and is brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Each Wednesday morning, check to see if you have your government-issued knife, then head on over and download the latest episode on your favorite streaming platforms, such as Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom.
And Pandora!
I don't know why you wrote and Audio Boom and Pandora. That's
Pandora,
not grammatically
because
correct.
Because Pandora deserves its own and.
It really doesn't.
It does. What was that?
Sorry. We're not saying...
Amy's throwing stuff across the table.
I am not!
Off the rails already. We're not saying we hear voices in the walls.
What?
But we're hearing voices in the walls.
It's because Amy got here.
Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 to find out what they're telling us. Help us.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
Honestly, I hope not. Because that's just advertisements.
Finally,
ditch your imaginary friends and head on over to our website to check out our entire list of episodes at filmlosophers.com.
That's right. We got over 190 episodes on our website. We are super stoked. Last week, we had a great conversation about Dr. Sleep, the sequel to the 1980 classic horror film The Shining. So after this episode, check it out because it was actually a really good and fun episode with me and Spence. But like we said, we brought in somebody today to kind of help us garner a conversation on the most recently somewhat controversial film from Taika Waititi, and that is Jojo Rabbit. I've been actually interested in checking out this film since its first debut in the trailers, and I know Spence and I have talked about this at length, and then when I mentioned it to Amy that hey, we were going to be doing this, she's like, oh, I saw this movie, we should if you guys need any, you know, added helper for the conversation, I'd love to talk about it.
And that's exactly what I sound like, and I totally said that.
Well, I don't necessarily have her voice down per se.
Hopefully I mean, you not. Did an excellent Tara Reid impression a long time ago.
Well,
was that the Sharknado episode?
Yes, it was.
Oh.
I mean, she
also did a really good Alaska impression too.
So,
first time guest, long time listener.
Yeah. So, right before we jump into this conversation, Spence, why don't you start us off before this thing gets any more off the rails with that official synopsis.
That's
goodness.
Way too late for that train.
Sure.
During the time of World War II, we follow a lonely German boy whose worldview is turned upside down when he discovers his single mother is hiding a young Jewish girl in the attic. Aided only by his idiotic imaginary friend Adolf Hitler, Jojo must confront his blind nationalism.
That's right. As we all should. Written and directed by Taika Waititi, the film stars Roman Griffin Davis as Johannes Jojo Betzler, Scarlett Johansson, Thomasin McKenzie, and Taika Waititi as his imaginary friend, an idiotic version of Adolf Hitler. The rest of the ensemble cast also includes Rebel Wilson, Stephen Merchant, Alfie Allen, and Sam Rockwell. A little bit about the film. It's actually based on Christine Lunan's book, Caging Skies, which actually dropped in 2004. Oddly enough, the screenplay for this film was made in 2011. So since the time of the film, since the time of the book being released, there's been a lot of people that have been wanting to make this into a film. It just happened to fall into the hands of creative genius Taika Waititi. So thankfully, you know, I'm glad it didn't fall into like Ron Howard's hands or, you know, Uwe Boll.
It would not have fallen into his hands.
You don't know. I mean, he made a cat silencer in that movie Postal, so.
How dare you reference anything he actually didn't? It's just so disrespectful.
Amy, do you know what we're talking about with Uwe Boll?
I had a question in my brain because I couldn't remember if Postal was the same as Postman, and I'm fairly certain it's not.
Uwe Boll is the guy who made House of a Thousand Corpses.
No, I don't watch any of those, so no. Let's not
as,
go there.
As well as he...
So wait, is this the guy that put the gun in the cat and then the...
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
This is the guy who who challenged anyone who wrote a bad review of his movies.
He's the guy that blocks and, everybody on Twitter.
Oh, no, yeah. He like boxed a journalist once.
Like, he did.
Professionally or just on the street? Like he boxed his ears?
They
or he, like,
got
just
a boxing ring and they were in it.
Did he lose?
I think somebody? He won.
Oh.
I don't remember.
Which doesn't help. Our arguments.
No,
I'm actually currently blocked by him.
Yay.
Are you serious?
No joke.
What did you do?
He told him his film sucked.
Essentially, yeah.
Look, I did it right.
Hmm.
But that was a while back.
He called him the Gestapo. I almost said the gazpacho, and I just realized that I can't call him a, you
that's
know,
a very different thing.
Soup, cold yeah. soup versus, you know, German Secret Service. Crazy people. Options. Cold soup.
I'm now wondering.
If you're still blocked? The answer is probably yes.
You're on a crazy train. I'd like to talk more about...
Listen, we're doing a review. We don't have time to delve into you and Uwe Boll's relationships.
He has a lot of relationship issues, I hear, on the
internet.
It's
true. the budget for this film was actually, because of the fact that it didn't require much CG or anything, it was only $14 million. It's box office opening because... So me and Spence, we actually, full disclosure, we actually made in our schedule the attempt to see this movie back in October.
So
unbeknownst to us that it wasn't supposed to release until November.
I have never been so angry to find out a film was in limited release.
That makes sense. I would be too. I mean, what else happens? Like, I didn't get to see The Arrival and now it's on digital.
Yeah, but like this...
I mean, The Departure. Is it The Arrival? The Departure? The Farewell? Farewell.
What are you,
that one.
Flying on a jet plane?
I'm leaving on a jet plane and I don't know when I'll be back again.
So we had scheduled around an October release and we were both looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
Then what replaced it?
I don't know. That was a month ago.
I really don't remember what
was it your Back to the Future episode?
No.
What episode was that, Eddie? The great one where Spencer was, you know, talking about the Back to the Future trilogy.
I don't know, Spencer. So what is that episode? It's your episode.
Okay, first off, don't try to shame me because I don't know the number of, like, the episode I did.
What is the episode that you did, by
it's
the
like
way?
It's like 100 and something. That part I do know.
It's 184.
He had to look it up. I know he did.
It was good, but is that what replaced JoJo?
No, I think it was... It was either The Nightmare Before Christmas.
When
no.
you were The Grinch?
I think it was either Rambo or... Yeah, it was either Rambo or The Nightmare Before.
No,
I know
it had to be Nightmare Before because that was in October.
Rambo oh, you're right, you're right, you're right. Yeah, it was probably Nightmare Before.
Yeah.
But we were hyped up, we were excited because obviously it's Taika Waititi. I mean, yeah. You can't go wrong with Taika.
Except with those contacts, but that's a spoiler.
But
we'll get there.
We'll get there. Hey, okay. Hey, lady, follow the notes, okay? Follow the notes.
My phone is currently sleeping.
Well, that sounds like a you problem.
It is.
but we were looking forward to it. We came together. We were meeting up, and we're like, all right. Oh, by the way, we got to get the tickets to go see that movie this weekend. Okay, we're scouring the internet. We're like, man, this must be like a really limited release because I'm not seeing this anywhere.
The closest theater was in Los Angeles.
Yeah. So we were like, oh, darn it. So needless to say, this has been a much long-awaited viewing of this film. And, you know, we got a chance to finally see it. Oddly enough, we all saw it at different times. However, coming together, I think getting the chance to talk to Spence before we got on air, I think we're coming together with a lot of the same mindsets and mentalities. But I want to have this conversation about what this film is, because right now, a lot of people are very skewed to one side when it comes to this film. Either there's a ton of people who are either in love with it, or there's a ton of people who actually really hate it.
What?
And you know what? As a film critic, as people who have been doing this, myself and Spence, who have been reviewing movies for a good amount of time now, I can see maybe part of it, but like of why you don't like it. But to get to the level of like hating it, I don't know. You know, it seems like a very strong, like, extreme for some. But I mean, there are people.
I feel like I can understand where those people are coming from.
How so?
Because you're doing a lot of Nazi, like, strong symbolism in there, and like, you know, some people just don't want to have anything to do with that.
I could see that. Like, this movie, so in all honesty, this movie is about the...
It's about Nazis.
It's about
Nazis. Don't sugarcoat it. It's about Nazis.
No, but yes, it's about Nazis, but in the full entirety of it, like, it's about Nazi Germany specifically, being in Germany at the time, a young boy who wants to be a Nazi, and the whole situation where his mom is, who is also German, is hiding a Jewish girl in her home, unbeknownst to him. Which
is a spoiler and not spoiler review, by the way.
This is going to be a spoiler review because of the fact that the film has been out for a good amount of time, so we'll go ahead and do a spoiler review.
Cool.
Plus, I know Spencer's probably dying to talk about certain things in the film that will give away some. And mind you, we won't give away key moments. We'll leave that to you to experience, but we're gonna tiptoe as close as we can to that edge without falling over. So
I'm gonna mess this up already. I feel it. I feel it in my body.
I know. That's like,
it's like we're gonna talk about things and I'm just like, shoot, can I say that part about that thing that did that stuff where there was like the uniform and the this part.
You do know we're only in, you know, we're only an audio podcast. No one can see all those movements.
It's like, for Spencer. It's all for Spencer.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't see you.
Like,
either,
should I leave the room here or something?
I don't know. It's a lot of pantomime.
It is. But jumping into this movie, expectations prior to going in. So I want to go around the table and kind of talk about expectations, because for me, I know the biggest expectation I had was ultimately what I've seen already from Taika. At this point, oh my gosh, this sounds so hipster, but I remember when Taika had done Hunt of the Wilder People, and that was a film that he had done that really got a lot of like crazy attention. It was a film that he actually done back in New Zealand. Let me see, when was that? Back in 2016. And it was an incredible movie with Sam Neill and the kid from, if you guys remember, Deadpool 2, the little fire starter kid.
Oh, okay.
He plays the other kid in this movie. And it was an incredible movie. And ever since then, I was like, oh, man, I got to, you know, find out more about Taika Waititi, which he had done a bunch of other stuff prior to, but this was the one that got my attention. And knowing, obviously, his most well-known work in Thor Ragnarok. I think we all here have seen Thor Ragnarok. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's anybody here who hasn't.
Empty chair. Have you not seen Thor Ragnarok? Perhaps you have.
You know, nobody knows that there's an empty chair. Now people will know there's an empty chair every time they listen to the episode. They're going to wonder what's going on with the empty chair.
Hey, you have space at the table. Everyone is welcome.
What
including
is this?
Empty
church?
Chair.
We're doing church here?
We could take you to church.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kanye. So I feel like Taika Waititi has already set so many expectations for himself with the hilarity of Thor Ragnarok, his, you know, his, him playing Korg in Thor Ragnarok, honestly, as well, and his work in his directorial work with, like, Hunt for the Wilder People, and then seeing what this is, like, to the extreme. I was hopeful that it was going to be a good movie, but I was also hopeful that I wasn't going to find myself laughing at inappropriate things.
Yeah.
Like,
there's no space not to. Like, really, coming in this situation, I think after I told you I'd seen it, you're like, and you weren't offended by it?
That's true.
Which was surprising, but also it's part of history. And being able to laugh or, like, draw back and be like, oh, this is really gross, is each and everybody's, like, different perspective. And so for me, because I had seen Taika as Korg, I had a lot of faith. I'd never seen his first film, but I had a lot of faith in him as a writer and as a director, that he's taking a subject that's very controversial, and I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt to go along on the journey. And if I was offended at the end of the movie, I'd be offended. Or if I was overly excited or I thought it was hilarious, I would. And it turned out to be right in the middle. I wasn't offended as much as someone would expect me to be offended because of my lineage. But I found it actually really endearing for different parts, and we can talk about that later. So
And just to clarify, because I know we're dancing around it quite a bit, and I was going to leave it to you to say it, but you're not going to say it. What is your lineage?
Oh, I'm Hebrew by blood or Jewish by another name. Official title, because I called myself on my podcast. I called myself a Mexi-Jew. I said, it's okay. The Mexi-Jew is here. And so, yeah, the Holocaust in World War II is actually a really sensitive subject. I had family that did die in concentration camps. My great aunt and uncle, and then a couple of cousins as well. So it's really touchy, and sometimes I will cry randomly. This one, I came into it with the perspective that we were seeing it from JoJo's eyes, and from the influence, the outside influence of everybody kind of pressing down, and you want to be a part of, you know, you want to be a part of something bigger, you want to be a part of something like a club. And I started thinking, if you put this in America, these are all the little kids that wanted to be in ROTC and everything else so that they could be soldiers, and it got weird fast. But yes, I'm a Mexi-Jew. Olay. Oy vey.
So her heritage is based in Jewish culture. She's Jewish by blood. She's not
like, by religion.
Not by religion. So
I'm just like, so we establish that. Ham and bacon.
So, Spencer.
Yes.
On that note, what were some of your expectations coming in? Because I know, like I said, both you and I had been talking about this for some time, and the expectation was really high about us getting to see this movie and really experiencing it because of everything that we had seen with the trailer. It looked really interesting. So,
just that trailer of just that one shot of, like, both JoJo and Taika's, like, Adolf just jumping over, like, a barricade in, like, this slow motion style. I was like, this looks so insanely ridiculous that I have to see it. Like, I just have to see where he's going to go with this, because I don't know, like, because this man is not, this guy does not strike me as, like, someone who could play Hitler.
No. Oh, no. That was the best part. Unexpected.
So I was like, I have to see where he's going with this, because, like, you know, he won me over in Thor, Ragnarok, and, you know, I'm on board for what he does now.
Yeah.
Very true.
And just...
Oh, my goodness.
Just playing the trailer in the background while we talk, it's like I'm laughing my head off, trying not to, like, snort. Because this movie is just the trailer alone sets the tone for what I'm hoping to see with this movie, what I was hoping to see with this movie. And at the same time, I was still slightly worried about laughing at inappropriate things, you know, especially the whole, like, you know, throwing knives and playing with grenades and stuff, and I'm like, hold up. I think one of the greatest things coming into this movie was having that trust, and I think that's one thing that I think we can all agree on, is having that trust in somebody like Taika Waititi to be able to carry this type of project and express it in a way that can be... Because I have yet to see him do anything controversial. I don't know about you guys. Have you guys seen Taika Waititi do anything controversial?
I mean, he picked up, you know, his friend that was kind of squishy in Ragnarok when he was Korg, and he was like, he might be dead. Oh, wait. Oh, he's not. So, carrying around possibly a dead creature, that could be controversial.
So, there you go.
Or wearing sure. those... Or, do you know what's controversial? No, I'm going to put my foot down. Wearing those contacts in all this right, movie.
We're talking about that initial, you keep going back to those contacts.
It just got me in such a deep place that I was just like, I can't... They're not even like blue. They're like green blue, like hedging on that. It's the color of like my water bottle blue, and I'm just like,
Yeah. See, like those contacts fell into like, you know how like some CGI faces fall into that uncanny valley type mm-hmm. thing. That's where those contacts led to.
They were so scary.
Yeah,
my soul couldn't handle it.
I don't even know what to say.
That's the controversy.
Yeah,
right,
that's what can you say about those contacts?
I mean, Nazis, you know, brainwashing the youth of that country, contact lenses.
There you go. Well, obviously, like we said, this is going to be a spoiler review. So if you haven't seen the film and you don't want things ruined for you, you can pause us here, go check out the movie, come back to us, and we'll, you know, you can hear all our thoughts and whatnot. So we give you a quick second. All right, you're back. Cool. So jumping into the actual film itself, after the film, what were some of your first impressions leaving the theater? Let's start with Spence. Spence, what were some of your first impressions once you left the theater after seeing this movie?
You know, this movie was a real journey. Just seeing like JoJo like just grow from like, you know, being just like a blind follower into someone who... kinda, sort of, was thinking about other people's perspectives was great. Like, I really liked this movie. Also, it kind of made me want to talk to my mom because Scarlett Johansson in this movie, I loved her. She was so great. She got, like, that fun mom character down.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that was one of the biggest surprises for me. Was not that I didn't think Scarlett Johansson could act, because in all honesty, the most she's been in as of late has been most Marvel films.
I just don't think like people like take her super serious that she could do something like this.
I agree 100%, and I think this was one of those situations where taking that into consideration, that the fact that before the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Scarlett Johansson was doing some pretty big stuff. Like, she had done Lost in Translation. She had done... She was in Her. She played the
I thought that was after Marvel, when she was already Black Widow.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
I thought you were going to bring other up the Woody... what is it? Crud.
Woody Allen?
Yes. With Hugh Jackman. She was in the movie Proof?
Oh, yeah.
Ha! Look at that. I pulled that one out from somewhere. But I mean, brain.
But I mean, like, in a bunch of other stuff, too. Like, I mean, outside of just simply Marvel films, she's done other things. Like, she was in The Black Dahlia. She was in The Prestige. She was in The Other Boylan Girl.
Did you say Boylan? You mean Boleyn?
Boleyn.
Boylan? She's not a soda. Oh, wow. My gosh. My soul.
You know, either
that,
way.
That author is rolling around somewhere just going, no, no.
Well, let her, because I don't care. She was also in The Island, which is one of the few Michael Bay movies that I'll actually watch. She's done a bunch of other things other than her role in the Marvel films. Like, even, I don't know if you guys had ever seen that movie she did called Under the Skin.
Is that the one where she's the alien?
She's the alien, yeah.
Hey, look at that. I pulled out another one. And I'm not even using an electronic. Yeah.
You are on a microphone, so that's technically electronic.
I'm not using something to check myself.
You should check yourself.
Because shotgun bullets are bad for my health? I don't know. Okay.
So, But I think that's one of the unique things about this particular character, this particular role. It's a surprise for a lot of people. Plain and simple. Mm-hmm. Like, I was surprised as all get out that Scarlett Johansson was able to play that so easily. Because I don't know if she is a mom. I don't know if she has kids. I don't know. Yes. But, like, does she?
I believe she does.
Are you sure? You just...
I've refrained from using an electronic to check my answer, so I will trust both of you to click that while I make the space on the microphone so that you might do it. Just tell me when you're ready.
So she was married to a French journalist, but was separated in 2017. They have a daughter. So she has a daughter. But it seems so seamless for her, you know, to be able to create this single mom type struggling vibe so transparent in a world where everybody else's focus is on the war and she's trying to balance taking care of essentially two kids. You know, the one that's hell-bent on becoming a Nazi and the one who's hiding within the walls of their home. You know, and it's really interesting. It's really crazy because of the fact that it's Scarlett Johansson, you know? But it's definitely a performance worth taking note of. Another incredible performance, you got to give it to... because obviously, we'll talk about JoJo in a second, but like supporting cast, I absolutely love Sam Rockwell in just about everything he does. And I don't think there's ever been a performance of Sam Rockwell's that I was like, he could have done better. Like, I've liked him in just about everything.
Except in the Marvel movies.
No, I liked him in that, too. It's just he didn't get enough exposure.
He's just a hammer. It's okay.
He's Justin Hammer in the Marvel films. Just one Marvel film, to be quite honest.
And I made a joke because I said he's just a hammer, not Justin Hammer. Oh, gosh. Okay. I'm so glad you can't see me right now.
I'm so glad.
I'm just gonna stay down here, Spencer.
But I've to be quite honest, I have never seen. If you were to tell me that this movie is going to have a closeted gay commanding Nazi officer
with one eye,
with one white out eye, who ends up wearing the most flamboyant Nazi uniform at the end of the film that you've ever imagined, and like him at the end of it all, I would say that's got to be a CGI character because I can't think of anybody who could play that role.
Yeah.
But you put Sam Rockwell into that, and you're like, yeah, that definitely works. And it's so great because there's this like sexual tension between Sam Rockwell's character and Alfie Allen's Freddie Finkel? Or
Finkel.
Well, I know his last name is Finkel, but I was wondering his first name.
They just call him Finkel.
They said his first name in one of the scenes when they're doing like the Hell Hitlers, like the 20 Hell Hitlers in that kid's house.
You mean
house.
The Heils?
Hail Heil, all the same. Woman.
Nobody that speaks German Woman. Is going to be listening to this. Yes.
And Pandora. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
No, I think though, the way he pursues that character and the way he creates that level of like he's trying to keep things under wraps, but at the same time, because it feels like he realizes there are other things that are trying to be hidden during this time other than hiding Jewish people in homes. And I think that was one of the great things, the great connecting points for this particular character. I don't know. What did you think, Spence?
Yeah, so I was not expecting him to, like, after JoJo left the camp where he was initially training.
Oh, you didn't think he was going to come back into the
sword? And then when he just did, he was like, I got demoted because of what happened to you.
It wasn't even subtle. Like, the mom comes in, like, you don't even know what's happening in the scene, and Scarlett Johansson walks up to Sam Rockwell and knees him in the groin. I'm like, oh, I was supposed to be paying attention to that.
Yeah, that's not the... I was just expecting, you know, a whole lot of lip, but she's a mom who will go at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, also was not expecting... Like, just really, his whole character is just, you're not expecting this guy.
No, not
like,
at all.
From being able to shoot whatever he wants to just like the the way he's dressing at the end of the movie to like a sacrifice he makes at the telltale end. Mm-hmm. Like every time he was on screen, I just didn't expect what he did for the most part.
And he does it like
really well.
Really well. Yeah. Like,
it integrates well into all of the scenes because on that initial, when she's walking in, Scarlett Johansson's walking in with JoJo and he's going to be working in this office with Sam Rockwell's character. Sam Rockwell is by Alfie Allen's character and he's eating pie, like with his shirt unbuttoned and he's like trying to feed it to Alfie. Like, it's, yeah, it's such the weirdest space. And you're like, what? What? What?
Yeah, like that was a scene where it's like, okay, we walked in too late. Like, we need to back up like a few minutes.
And just we're just like, wait,
like, where? What's happening here? What? This is. I don't remember reading this in the history books. Yeah. Hold up.
Well, and that was great. And then when they're at the camp, like the camp was not the peak of his character. But when he's like, okay, and the boys, you're going to learn all of these things. And he's listing off things. And he's like, and the girls are going to learn to dress wounds, to make beds, and how to get pregnant. And I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
No, like, to be honest, I was like, when I saw there was, like, girls in the audience, I was like, what are, like, I feel like this time would be really sexist. What do they have these girls here for? And when he said that, I was like, yeah, that yeah, tracks yeah, with what I expected.
And then
there's nothing else.
You got Rebel Wilson's character's like, I've had 13 children in the last years. So I'm like, oh, my
it's
God.
It's a great decade to be a woman. And yeah. I was like, girl, no.
Which I'm gonna state this now. I'm going to put this on the table. I absolutely despise
so much
Rebel Wilson.
Yep.
Like every word, every synonym to despise, attributed to that statement. I expletive Rebel Wilson.
That sounds dirty.
Well, I hate, I despise, I whatever synonym to that word, Rebel Wilson, because I can't stand her.
Yep.
I think her,
it's very clear.
I can't stand her voice. I can't stand the way she acts. I can't stand the way she thinks she's funny. It's like, it's almost personal for me, like, quite honestly.
You mean like the way you think you're funny when you label Spencer at the beginning of every episode?
Oh, 100%. Name? Exactly. But
that's why he doesn't like her. They're kindred spirits.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. This has been a big episode.
You know what?
For you.
You know what? You know what? But
there's a but which takes everything out
as
of the
much as I despise her, her role in this film actually works for me.
Wow.
It was palatable or it worked?
It was palatable.
Okay.
And I say that.
We're getting right there.
Yeah. It was palatable because of the fact that, number one, it was at a minimum. And number two, they used very funny moments to include her in there. Like, like when they're at the pool. And JoJo's asking him, like, you know, how would I know if I've met, like, what would I do if I ran into a Jewish person? What would happen? Blah, blah, blah. And
they hypnotize somebody. Have they hypnotized somebody?
And Sam Rockwell's like, I don't know about that. And then Rebel Wilson's like, oh, yeah, it's true. And it takes her forever to slide from one side of that pool.
That was the slowest slide.
And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Everyone's just looking at her like, what are you doing?
She couldn't even stand up. She just slid in the white dress across the entire bench. And I was like, girl.
Or when they're like, here, well, why don't you take these conscriptions? Like, yeah, you can just take these out to the war and blah, blah, blah. And then JoJo's like, okay. And she's like, okay, here's your bag and here's your gun. And she points the gun at the kid. And the mom's like, hey, don't point that gun. And she's like, it's a gun. Here, just take it. Just take it.
But she also, Scarlett Johansson, right before that, yeah, when he's like, I want to be conscripted. Scarlett Johansson's like, yes. Yes, my 10-year-old son, I approve. Somebody get this child a gun. And that's where I was like, she followed up and got him a gun. She's like, you said he could have a gun.
But I think the standout character of all these people, of all these supporting cast, has to be Archie Yates's Yorkie.
Yes.
That little friend.
That child is glorious. Whoever his parent is, you did a beautiful job. That child is amazing.
You're doing great.
He is gold. He is pure, just
like, how can you say no to this kid? How can you say no to that face?
Archie, we love you, dude. Like,
like,
seriously.
Look at that.
We're not gonna fatten you up and send you chocolates, but like, we appreciate you. We'll give you high fives, hugs,
every
and handshakes.
Time time this kid was on screen,
yes,
it was something hilarious.
Yes.
It was. And it was sad for me. Like, for me at one point in time, like, I was actually worried about, like, where this kid was at in certain
exactly.
places. Like, I was actually worried about Yorkie. I'm like, where's Yorkie? Where's Yorkie?
And like, also, the way he said it, it didn't sound like he said Yorkie. I almost thought the kid's name was Yogi.
I thought it was that too.
Right.
Oh, yes.
What is up with you guys? You guys
know. It sounded
German.
Like Yogi.
It's
it said
German.
Yorkie.
It's
he even
German.
Said my friend Yorkie.
My friend Yogi. Not.
Yeah.
The R
like
is
that. Like.
You
muted.
Sound like you're
it
saying
Yogi. It sounds
Yogi.
Like that. That R just like slips out sometimes.
Most of them, like if you say, like, it's deer, it's not deer. Like, D-I-R is not deer. It's deer. Like, the R is it's rolled back in. It's really weird. So I thought he said Yogi.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, but mm-hmm. let's talk about this magical child, please. Before we talk about the other magical child, but this particular bespectacled magical child needs a lot of attention.
Uniquely enough, Archie Yates, this is actually his debut film. He doesn't have anything else in his
wow.
in his repertoire.
He's about wow. to get a bunch of calls.
So, like, this is his full bio, guys. Archie Yates
that's so
is
blank.
An actor known for Jojo Rabbit.
That's
his whole bio.
That's amazing, though. I mean, even when we meet him and he's at the camp with Jojo and they're laying down and he's like, I thought I was your... Jojo's explaining that his best friend... He must be best friends with Defia. Like, that's his entire goal. And he's like, I thought I was your best friend. He's like, well, just be satisfied that you're number two, okay? It'll be great. He's like, unless you're Hitler... Unless you're the Fuhrer in a fat kid's body.
Yeah, you're right. Like,
just
his
the
face.
Fat kid in a fat kid's body.
I'm just a kid in a fat kid's body, yeah.
And it was so sincere.
Gosh.
Like,
it
there
was.
there wasn't any, like, sarcasm. He's just like, okay.
Oh, because the kid tells him, he's like, unless you're the Fuhrer in a little kid's body, you just be happy that you're the second best friend. He's like, yeah, I guess I'm just a kid in a fat kid's body. And it's hilarious how he responds. Even, like, his facial, you know, performances... The scene I was remembering it from the trailer, when they're practicing, and he ends up like throwing the knife, and it lands.
It hits the tree. That's right. It bounces off the tree.
This
their
one.
Special issued knife. Oh,
and his face right there is just so incredible. Like his response to that is like, oh no.
His knife, so for anybody listening, his government-issued special Hitler-approved knife, they're practicing throwing him into the trees, and he throws it at the one tree, it bounces off, and lands straight down in the thigh of another kid, and he's like, oh, God. Oh. It's not even like, walk it off, you're good. He's just like, guys.
Yeah. So I really believe this is a kid to look out for. Archie Yates, that's going to be somebody who's going to immediately pop into like Disney. I have no doubt
mm-hmm.
he's gonna be picked up by like because I'm pretty sure Fox because Fox is still doing Spotlight films for a little bit before they fully get absorbed by Disney. I know they're the company itself, but Fox Spotlight, they're still doing some of their films, which is what Jojo Rabbit's created under.
Ooh, you're right, it is Fox Searchlight.
So
dang.
But The star of this particular film, the unique actor who really takes the cake, the lead character of Roman Griffin Davis, who plays Jojo.
Mm-hmm.
this kid was very nuanced. We were talking about, Spence and I, we were talking about the little girl who played Abra in Dr. Sleep.
Is it? I haven't seen Dr. Sleep, and I haven't listened to your guys' episode because I'm trying to maintain, you know. Let's say, small child actress that does fantastic work is
mm-hmm.
what we're saying.
Yes. Yeah, it was her debut film.
Is
her
this
name
his
was,
debut film?
Yes.
Has it?
Is it a double debut for both
oh,
the wee
yeah.
gentlemen?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude.
And what's with all these kids knocking it out of the park on their first movie?
Completely. Like, it's crazy how... We're moving more into the realm where we have a lot of these younger actors who are taking on such like big roles and completely knocking them out of the park.
They're crushing these roles. It's ridiculous.
Crushing is like this is annihilating. This is this is stealing the hand grenade, jumping over the barricade, and it hitting a tree and landing in front of you, and kaboom!
Oh my gosh.
That was very, very precise. And
that was very precise.
So amazing.
Oddly enough, Roman, he actually has a link to a few of the Marvel films. His dad, who's known as Ben Davis, is the cinematographer for the Guardians of the Galaxy, the first Guardians of the Galaxy film, mm-hmm. The Avengers Age of Ultron, Doctor Strange, as well as Captain Marvel.
Wow.
So he has history in film. It's just, this is his first outing into the actual, you know, foray of acting. But it's pretty plain to see that we're starting to get a lot more children actors who are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Take, for instance, Spence, we talked about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Lesson 172. And I don't know if you remember, but in that movie, there was a little girl who was just, you know, incredible. And she's the same.
She was acting like she was 30. It was ridiculous. Was.
And mind you, she completely commanded that entire scene. Like, there was no doubt in my mind that this little girl is going to go places.
Mm-hmm.
Her name's Julia Butters. No joke, that's her name.
I was not going to make a joke, but I was just like, girl.
I thought someone was going to make a South Park reference.
No. Because I love Butters. He was one of my favorite characters, I'm not going to lie.
Well, she was in, I don't know if you guys had ever seen that series, American Housewife, but she's in that series. And the only
that
reason
that explains why she can act like she's 30.
She's not the housewife.
No. When you surround yourself with, I'm not trying not to speak disparagingly of
sounds that, like you're speaking disparagingly
that particular series, but when there are adult themes and you're around adults for a long time, you start acting like adults, or you pick up those tricks and tips, and you start morphing into whoever you need to be or adapting. And
you know, I said American Housewife, not like Housewives.
No,
not the series. Okay, hold on.
Are you bringing this up? I don't know. Ooh, I like her though. She's awesome.
So,
oh, this is an ABC thing. Oh, yeah. No, I was thinking it was like the Real Housewives type thing.
No.
Oh, I thought it was the one with Terry What's-Her-Face.
No. Which is why I'm like,
Desperate Housewives.
That's Desperate
Housewives. I haven't seen that one either.
That got off the air like ages ago.
I don't know.
Yeah.
When I get out, I get out. I don't.
So that series is actually, it's funny. It's a comedic series, but she plays a very intelligent little girl. And it's great to see how people like her, people like, we were saying Archie Yates, people like Roman Davis, we're getting an influx of great kid actors who are now carrying that torch, if you will, of what is to come for cinema and movies. And I don't know about you guys, but it kind of excites me a bit to know, because we've literally been in an age where the full brunt of our children actors have come from either Nickelodeon or Disney.
Yes.
Very true.
And it's not because they're good. It's because they have exposure. They come with an audience already.
They also come with Barney credentials on some occasions.
It's true. They do come with Barney credentials. So it's sad to say that we are still kind of on the tail end, because a lot of them are either falling away from acting, or they're like, oh, I want to make a clothing label, or I want to do this, that, or whatever. Like, a lot of them are doing their own thing now. And we're kind of moving into the realm of, like, hey, we need new children actors, and let's hope that this next batch are actually good, and they're actually good. You know, that's a really fun thing for me, because I know now the next 20 years of movies are going to be okay.
Depending upon if they continue to move forward with acting.
Yeah.
Well, these kids seem smart. And most of their families...
They seem smart. They're going to stick with it.
They're going to stick with it.
They're going to stick with it, definitely.
They're not going to Drew Barrymore this, but maybe they will.
I mean, I would hope they would Drew Barrymore this.
You want them to get crunk at parties and then, you know, move forward in their...
I thought you were talking about from her being a child actor all the way from, like, E.T. and Firestarter and still being movies... All the way up
what
until
happened,
like today.
And what happened in that in-between period?
She flowed with the trends. She did the 90s type style movies. She did the 2000s type style movies.
He's purposely avoiding this, isn't he?
I think there's a bit of that we're glossing over.
Glossy McGlossy pants.
Well, then tell me. Go ahead. Tell me. Spit it out.
How crunk did she get when she was moving from being a child star to actually doing stuff in the 90s?
She didn't.
Yeah.
Drew Barrymore?
Mm.
Not really. She didn't. That's what I'm saying. She's one of those consistent ones that actually... So Drew Barrymore actually comes from a long line of actors. So her parents were actors as well. Her father was a very well-known actor. Her grandfather was a vaudeville actor.
Vaudeville.
So Drew Barrymore has been in the industry for a long time. It was only a matter of time before she got her first start, which was in Firestarter, and also the subsequent follow-up to that with E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of steamrolled into like, hey, this girl can act. Let's keep using her. And they kept using her for all the different roles, like whether if it's Home Fries or Never Been Kissed or Ever After or her role in the Charlie's Angels franchise.
I like that he brought up romance movies first.
Okay, but like the thing is though, is
what
that
else is there?
Like, all of the Wedding Singer, you did not bring up Wedding Singer.
Yeah, that's a romance movie though.
I know, but you did the other ones first, which is really funny.
Yeah, you know, she was in like rehab for 18 months before her 13th birthday.
She was in rehab?
Yes.
Stow it and blow it, bro.
Yeah.
Stow it and that's, blow it.
Like, because like, I'll be honest, I don't fully like know because like it's
she,
not my
she
life.
Was very but, like, yeah, very transparent about it too. Yeah. She's spoken out about that. She was going to the parties when she was after E.T. and they were getting her drunk. And she remembers struggling with it and she went to rehab. But I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go for it.
No, that was basically it.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, mind you, it never affected the way I viewed her. It's not like it's... So the time that I saw her, her early years, her 13th birthday was when? Like in 1988, 87? All of us in this room were probably like maybe 2 years old at the time.
I was wanting some change.
How was that going to be top news to either of any of us here?
I like the 80s, so sue me. I was well aware of that situation. I'm also well aware of what usually happens to most child actors, regardless of what like
it does seem
period
to be
they come from.
Kind of a trend.
And that's the thing that it. If we're looking at yes, the prior batch of child stars that were coming from Disney, that were coming from Nickelodeon, that are moving forward from those houses, as it were, they struggle aggressively with not just mental illness, but with substance abuse, with a whole bunch of other things. And some of them come out of it. Some of them don't. Some of them are still working through it. And yes, while we are getting a beautiful new crop of baby actors, because right now every child under the age of 13 is going to be a baby to me, it's cautious. These kids are fantastic. They are earnest in their portrayal of who they are. They're sincere in their performances. And all it takes is somebody, you know, that's in it for the money or whatever to completely derail them. So when I say there's the opportunity they might not want to continue acting, you can look back and look at this and go, they did a really good job in this. And I want to like go, this is awesome. You guys are great. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean, either way, like the push forward for whatever is happening with these new and young actors, there's a new sense of hope for what's to come in film. And mind you, however the parents choose to expose them, however these kids choose to move forward, I think personally, and I'm hoping, this is just probably me being an optimist, but
you're an optimist?
No. But the idea that there are more than enough examples of how not to pursue a career in Hollywood that I feel like it's like bowling with bumpers on. It kind of you'd kind of have to be dumb to be at a particular stage in your career and be like, "All right, I'm going to veer this way because it's what I want to do," after seeing like all these other child actors who either OD'd or were in rehab or fell off the wagon somehow in some way or whatever. Mind you, yes, human nature is human nature. But with the amount of examples we have of people who are either no longer here, number one, or no longer have the career they used to, or cannot excel at the level they used to due to their abuses and whatnot, I think there's enough of that to really redirect people back in the right direction.
Speaking of redirect, I'd really like to talk about how Roman did in this film, because we've veered off heavily, of course, into.
Well, thanks to Little Miss over there.
Who's Little Miss over there? Is it the chair? Chair, you did such a great job in misdirecting everybody. Good job, chair.
I going back to Roman, you have to appreciate the abilities that he has of creating the nuance between a young kid who is struggling to understand who he is and being a child, facing those moments, and then turning into like a grown adult at certain times with trying to be the quote-unquote man of the house. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's very well expressed, and I think he does an exceptional job at showcasing all those range of emotions. Like, whether if it's him crying because he's being forced to kill a rabbit, which he chooses not to, to him being kind of weary of the secrets his mom may be keeping and is like trying to oust her in telling him about what's going on at the dinner table. Which, mind you, side note, that dinner table scene is incredible. Like, mm-hmm. I love that dinner table scene where the mom, like, she goes, "Oh, you want your dad? All right, I'll go get your dad." And she just puts on his like SS coat or his soldier coat or whatever and goes and grabs some ash, puts it on her face to make it look like a beard, and does the whole mom dad dance with him. Like, just the way that whole thing plays out with it's that goes back to talking about how great Scarlett Johansson is.
Also, the amazing part to me for that scene, and I don't know why I noticed this, is how she was able to get all that ash on her without touching her lipstick.
Exactly.
I was like,
If she rolled him in, if she rolled in her lips when she did the smear, she would have less, she would have actually had it on top of like her Cupid's bow.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it was like pristine, perfect lips.
Yeah. Nailing it.
Mind you, the magic of imagination. it's such a great scene, and you have to appreciate the level of care that Taika Waititi does and takes when like creating a scene like this and having it expressed on film. Because mind you, it's easy to write about it in certain aspects. It's easier to write about it and not like have the person who is reading it visualize it in their own head. As people who are imaginative, you can create whatever scene you want.
Heck yes, I can.
But when it comes to actually expressing that scene and having it visually come across, this was one of those scenes that I think reading it was like, oh man, how are we going to do that? Like, you want me to do what? And I have to, you know, I think because of this film, I have a renewed anxiousness of seeing Scarlett Johansson's next work. Not that I, like I said, not that I didn't see, think
it's going to be Black Widow.
Very good. He's got you there.
That's true.
I can just go back and watch Lost in Translation again.
You could. I know that her next film that's not so superhero, like, because her role in Her
mm-hmm.
is absolutely phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Her role in Under the Skin, incredible. Like, the way they went about doing that and creating the film and everything with those people. I'm anxious to see her next film outside of a franchise.
Okay.
Probably is the best way to put it. Because with everything I've seen so far in this film, I have to say, she still has it. She still got
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
100%.
One of the other things I kind of wanted to touch on, because I know we're running out of time here, was the idea of this film being possibly offensive. We had mentioned earlier that there could be this kind of skew in the film, whether if it's not offensive and just a satirical like a satirical story, or it can be completely offensive, being, you know, insulting to those who've gone through this and so forth. And I think that's a point of conversation that I just kind of want to touch on with us, because in all honesty, knowing that there's two sides to this whole endeavor, like there are people that are like, oh, it's so wrong of them, I can't believe they went ahead and did this, I can't believe they're doing a movie like this and blah blah blah. And then there are people like, this movie better win an Oscar. This mm-hmm. is an absolute masterpiece. You were saying something earlier, Spence, how you said you could see both sides of that spectrum. Like, you could see why some people may be a little upset or maybe even mad at the film.
Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Well, it just, like, the subject of Nazis is, like, it's part of, like, history. Mm-hmm. When people take things and make light of it, you're going to have someone who is upset. And, like, I can kind of understand from, like, that perspective. Because it's not my, you know, background or history. So,
yeah.
You know, I try to be sensitive of other people's feelings when it comes around. Like, you know, sensitive subjects that, like, you know, it's not my personal family history or experience. So, like I kind of can get see it if, like, someone's like, yeah, I'm not into this movie because of Nazis. Like, I get that, like, as an idea, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, mind you, that makes a lot of sense, you know, for people who view things in that manner. I don't know. What do you think, Amy? Because, like we stated earlier, you have difficulty seeing films of this type of nature that are more serious.
Well, let's be very frank. I haven't seen Schindler's List for the exact purpose of that I will break down and cry.
Hmm.
I also drew the parallel of, and mind you, I watched the only reason I know about the little girl in the red coat in Schindler's List is because I watched the documentary on Steven Spielberg that was on HBO. There you go. That's how I know about her. But I thought they were trying to draw a parallel because of Scarlett Johansson's footwear. Mm-hmm. When they were showing it in so many spaces, and I was like, oh, you better, no, don't do that. But when it comes down to it, I totally agree with you, Spencer. I can see both sides of the coin coming from Nazis are always a hot button issue,
yeah.
Period. To even contemplate now that there are people who blindly followed to such an extreme that they murdered anybody that was different. And it wasn't just the Jews. It was gypsies. There was autistic. It was homosexuals. There was a vast chunk of people, but the primary focus was Jewish. And it's a hot button issue. So people are going to become very offended very quickly about it.
Mm-hmm.
The other way to look at it is that they start seeing things in today's culture, in today's society, where it's paralleling.
Yeah.
And they get very like, oh, you can't say that. And it's this movie gives you the space to hold up a mirror and to look. Mm. And Roman's performance as Jojo gives you that journey through his eyes to see, like, he was so excited to be a part of the Nazi party. Oh my gosh. My brain.
Wow.
It happened. I'm so sorry about that. But he wants so badly to be a part of the Nazi party that when he finally meets Elsa, who is the Jewish girl that's hiding upstairs, it's that walk. It is that journey. It's watching him slowly shift and realizing the humanity of people. And it can be unsettling for somebody who has been in a situation where they have decided to hate, whether because of indoctrination or because of that's what they were brought up to, and it becomes uncomfortable. And when it becomes uncomfortable, we do one of two things. Either we push it aside and go, whatever, never mind, or we get outraged. And in this day and age, it's easier to get outraged and to rally people to our cause to be outraged than to earnestly look at ourselves. And so the reason why I liked it so much wasn't that it's Nazis and it's World War II and I love history, which I do. Not Nazis. I don't love Nazis. But I'm putting that down. Hard stop. Don't love Nazis. The reason I appreciated this so much was because the children in this, it was the innocence. And Scarlett Johansson being that mom where when Jojo, after his accident, is going to go out and he doesn't want to go out because he's ugly. And he's like, is it dangerous? And she looks out the window and she goes, yes, extremely. And then she flings open the door on this grand adventure. She still has and maintains that optimism in this bleak time period to not only encourage her child and not sugarcoat it and go, oh yeah, it's safe to go out now, but go forward, go boldly and know that I'm going to be there with you and we'll go together. Like, she's raising him in that environment to find the small kindness, to find the small moments of resistance and to rise up and be like, not follow, go with the flow. That's mm-hmm. the conversation she had with Ilsa, who's the Jewish girl, at one point, where she was trying to explain that if JoJo finds out about her being upstairs, and at this point in the movie, JoJo knows she's upstairs, that he will turn everybody in and everybody's going to die. And she brings up, it took him 3 weeks to calm down from finding out his grandfather didn't have blue eyes. Like, that's how tightly he's been, like, trained. And when we progress to the end of the movie, we finally see that he's shifted so much and so brilliantly. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to people, like I said, it's a lot easier to get mad than to go, wait, is this, what can I take from this? Mm-hmm. Also, and this is just flat out, if you're doikty enough to go to a movie and be upset about the product and go rant about it, you spent your money. I appreciate you. I know Taika and the studios appreciate you coming and spending your angry money, because once controversy starts up on a movie, everybody either wants to see it or they boycott it. And then that just makes people want to see it more.
Yeah. So, yeah. Very true. And I think that's a really strong standpoint to carry, because I think one of the best things about this film is it doesn't allow the politics, if you will, of what is happening during that time frame. It doesn't allow the heart of what was going on at the time to take hold of the reins of this story of self-discovery and earnestly recognizing the uniqueness and the truth of who we all are. And at the base level of it all, we are all part of the human race. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things. Like, there's this great running gag that happens in this movie where JoJo's trying to write a book about the Jewish people, and he decides he's going to quote unquote exploit this Jewish girl who's hiding in their walls by getting all this information so that he could write a book and make millions. And he's getting this information, and she's just feeding him what he wants to know. Like, oh yeah, we don't eat food. It's poisonous to us, so if you give it to us, we'll more than likely die. And we used to live in caves, and now whenever we come out, when we live in houses, we sleep like bats upside down on the rafters. And feeding into this already pre-fed propaganda that's been given to this child for all this time. And seeing that, like Amy was saying, seeing that transition for this child of getting to a place where, no, there is nothing else more important to me right now than serving the motherland, giving back to what is Germany and becoming a part of this Aryan, whatever they want to call it, this Aryan mob or gangs, whatever, you know, however they see themselves, like being a part of this and giving back. Like, that's his whole goal at the beginning of the film. And although it does touch on certain parts here and there, in the fullest amount of what this film does, it is a true journey, like Spence said. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It really does create this up and down mindset of, at one point in time you're laughing your head off, you're joking, you're smiling, and the next you're like, oh man. Like we were talking before we went on the air, we were talking with producer Corey, and we're like, yeah, it's like all over the place. He's like, well, give me a movie to compare it to. And me and Spence looked at each other. I'm like, I don't think I can.
I don't know what I'd even think would be close to this.
Like, there isn't. Exactly. There's not really a movie that really comes close to this in comparison. Like, you could say, well, oh, it's got to be like Schindler's List. No, it's not. And then you're like, oh, well, it's got to be like Inglourious Basterds. No, it's not like that either. Like, you got two polar opposites, and this film is kind of that feel-good journey that comes to an ending that you will most likely not expect, but come to expect as the film comes along. And we had mentioned Corey, he's like, well, what does that mean? What do you mean it's well? I'm like, well, there's a moment where you're laughing because there's a kid talking about his, like, there's Archie Yates' character, Yorkie. He's talking about his uniform, and it's made of paper. He's like, well, it's not really paper. It's like a paper-like material. It's like synthetic. They're made, whatever. And it's literally like a paper uniform. And And then that's hilarious. And he's laughing. He's like, I can't really move in this thing. And then in the next moment, you're seeing Jojo with his mom looking at people that are hanging in the middle of the square.
Yeah.
People who are traitors to the country. And it's sobering. You know, it's extremely sobering to watch because you're like, yeah, this was probably going on at the time. Mm-hmm. And mind you, I know we spend a lot of time in history and in the courses of our lives reflecting back on this time. We look back and we look at the Germans as a whole. We look back and we're like, well, you know, okay, most of them, you know, they were probably all Nazis. But the truth of the matter is, they were just as much oppressed as the people they were invading. Maybe, obviously not as like the Jewish people or whatever, but there were people within that country that were also fighting back mm-hmm. and not wanting to be a part of that. And unfortunately, they fought back and they ended up being outnumbered, you know, sad to say. And I think the fact that this film gives you a clear depiction of, you know what, we don't have to look at each other and see labels. And it's interesting that I think of that because Amy had mentioned something about labels earlier today. We were talking about, what were we talking about, that affirmation things or something? And you had mentioned about labels.
Oh, I have an app, and I'm trying not to plug the app, but it's called Wobot, and it's about if you have anxiety or depression, it's helping to redirect and look at your brain patterns and to train yourself. And so one of the things that it does, it's an AI. It asks you at the very, very beginning when you first start to put some negative labels, to write some negative labels that you actively believe about yourself, and you write them down. And then it's understanding today, and it does a lesson a day. And then today's lesson was talking about that some labels that we receive, or some diagnoses that we receive, we turn into labels and they become self-fulfilling prophecies. So instead of saying, if you went and you found out you have depression or you have anxiety, you start saying, I am depressed and I am anxious, instead of I have these things. And it's adapting and changing your labels so that you can understand and go, this is not inherently a part of who I am. This is something that has been placed upon me, and I can overcome it, or I can shift that label to show a different side. And that's very true when Ilsa is telling Jojo, and she tells him a couple of times, you're not a Nazi. And he's like, what? You take that back. Like, and it's, I think it's just deep down, he wants to belong to something, and he's realizing that who he is on the inside, he can't. And she sees him plainly, because if his mother can take her in and feed her her dinner, because they're on rations, and feed her her dinner and give her little bits of whatever she can, he can't be all that bad and all that different from his mother.
Yeah. And I think you hit it perfectly on the head. You know, just the fact is that this film helps you realize that we don't have to look at the world and recognize solely just labels. We can see people and humanity, and we can transcend the idea that when we look at people, we look at what we think we know, and we expect what we think we should expect. And I think in a time like right now, I think this message is as important as ever, because right now people look at cops and they expect cop killers. They look at Mexicans or Hispanics and they think labor workers. They look at black people and they're like troublemakers. They look at white people and they think uppity people. You know, there's labels throughout the entire U.S. for everybody, and I don't want to go through every single one of them because I know I'll probably offend somebody. But the fact is that there are labels, and when we get to a place where we can say, you know what, I'm just going to look at you for you. I'm going to look at Spence for Spence. I'm going to look at Amy for Amy. I'm going to look at producer Corey for producer Corey, and just expect you to show me who you are. Which, oddly enough, I want to wrap this up with this. sadly enough, I got this from a Tyler Perry thing, but
but we're like he made hard
a,
turn.
He
hard
made
turn.
A, he made a quote, and I thought it was so unique. It's a Maya Angelou quote, but he goes, "When people," Maya Angelou once said, "When people show you who they are, believe them." And I think that's one of the things, just as a people, as a culture, as a race, that is a place we need to keep ourselves in, because when we start veering off, we get things like what happened during World War II. We get things like what happened during the 1980s with like the crack epidemic, so to speak. We get things like with what's going on now with, you know, people dying in police custodies or people, horrible things happening in other parts of the U.S. I think going back to that, that is where we need to find ourselves back in. So, wrapping this up, any last thoughts before we go to our review or before we go to our monocles, Spence?
Nope.
Amy?
There's so many one-liners, we didn't get to any of them. We didn't even talk about Yorkie and them cuddle needs right there at the end.
That was a pretty funny line. Like, I'm just going to go home to my mom. I need cuddles. Like, that
after
line was...
After he's been in a battle and been in war, and his little tiny paper suit is completely gone.
Yeah.
And he's okay just sitting there. And he's like, it's like the hard day at the office. I just need my mama, and I need some cuddles. Like, there's so much wonder in this dark comedy that take the time to watch it.
Yeah. What about you, Spence? Any special one-liners that you remember that stand out to you?
No, it was more just actions, like, you know, Cho-Cho blowing himself up with that grenade.
Oh, my gosh.
Because, like, I didn't see him in that, like, grenade explosion in the trailer because it's in there, and he's just there on the ground. It was pretty, that's probably
watching the trailer back, you could see, when you see the bomb go off, yeah, like the grenade go off, I didn't realize until I was watching it. I was like, oh, shoot. Like, okay, never mind.
Or and probably this is just a Yorkie thing, but like even his line at that tail end too, when JoJo's like, nothing makes sense anymore, and Yorkie's like, yeah, I know, definitely not a good time to be a Nazi.
Oh my goodness.
So wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table, and we'll start with our guest, Amy. Amy, does the film pass or fail in terms of its ability to create a wholesome journey for you and allow you to recognize what it is, which is Taika's, you know, satirical comedy for this time? Does it pass or fail in its endeavors? And how many monocles out of five would you give it?
Well, considering you used the word wholesome, I don't know if it's wholesome, but the journey, it passes for me. So let's start with that. The answer question, it passes. And I don't have bifocals or monocles. I can't be trusted. So I'm going to give it a good 4.6.
4.6 like monocles. Nice. Spencer?
Yeah, this movie definitely passes for me. I now have a new favorite director.
Hey.
Yeah.
Because, like, guy just knocks it out of the park.
Every time.
I know. It's insane. Hopefully he's able to keep it up. I'm definitely looking forward to his next project, mm-hmm, and a lot of these kids' actors' next project. And I will be there for Black Widow for Scarlett Johansson.
Very true.
I'm going to give this a 4.5 because, you know, this just annihilation from everyone. This is such a good movie.
Very true. Very true. I am also going to pass this film. This film really exceeds at so many wonderful things. It really steps up beyond just a simple story of a family during Nazi wartime in Germany. It's much more than that. It has a great message, has a great heart to it, and Taika knows how to do a great juggling act. He juggled this hard subject with dark humor and some brevity at times, and creates strong moments at others, and it comes out as a winner for me. So the film passes. I'm also going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. I really enjoy this film. And like I said, from Taika Waititi, you can't really go wrong now, because every time he's been up to bat, it's been out of the park. It's a home run. Mm-hmm. It's a three-pointer. It's whatever other metric of sports you want to use to...
It's a try.
It's a hat trick. You didn't think I know that one.
You made a hockey reference and I made a rugby reference. So we're all good. Spence, you got a reference?
No, I don't do sports.
Spence was a wrestler. So
wait, what would you get in wrestling?
You pins.
There you go.
This is a hard. this is a hard pin. A push outside the line. I don't know.
I thought that was sumo.
No, they do lines in wrestling too, don't they?
But it's not like you're out. Like it's like okay, reset now because you've passed the
reset
line.
Now.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well. Speaking
I
have
questions.
Of, there you go. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Film Philosophers. Again, well, check us out on our website at filmphilosophers.com, where you can check out this episode as well as several others. Also, check us out on our social media pages at Facebook at facebook.com/filmphilosophers and our Twitter and Instagram page at twitter.com/filmphilosophy101 and our Instagram handle at filmphilosophy101 as well. We had a great conversation, and we're so glad that we were able to have Amy on hand. Thank you, Amy, for showing up and being here.
Yay, it was fun.
So, Amy, before we go, why don't you let people know where they can find you and your lovely podcast?
Yes, yeah, so you can find us at thecapelesscrusaders.com. That is your hub, your home away from home for all things Capeless Crusaders. We actually just had an episode drop this last... Oh, my gosh. I almost said Monday, but I believe it was Wednesday. Wait, no. It was Monday. Never mind. It's every third Monday of the month we drop a hot, fresh episode. And this month
I'm like, you need to check back with your team to find out.
No, I had to mentally check myself. My brain is all over the place. But we just dropped an episode this last Monday. It is called Get Stuff, Binge-Worthy Delicious Treats for Your Thanksgiving. And yeah, we are here. And you can find us on Twitter at... The Capeless Ones, on Instagram at The Capeless Crusaders, on Facebook at The Capeless Crusaders, and yeah, get to know my my fellow brothers in arms, because I'm the only lady. Olay.
There you go. Olay, ove. Also, just to let you know, we have a quick announcement for this upcoming month. December 8th, was it, or December 9th?
December something.
Spencer, do you remember?
No. You just told me about it like before we started.
It was December 9th. We have another great trivia extravaganza.
What?
We will be doing a Star Wars trivia night, so check it out.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's too deep. That's too deep. There's too much EU, man. We can't do this. This is shenanigans.
We're super excited to partner again with Video Game Bang, as well as the rest of the teams out there that'll be joining us for some awesome trivia fun. So if you have the time, you're in the Northern California area, specifically Sacramento, come out and check us out. We'll be there at Oblivion Comics and Coffee at 6 o'clock. The times will start at 6. We'll post all the information in terms
of... Yeah, because you'll probably need to register beforehand.
Exactly.
You have to register. There's not an option.
Yeah.
I was there for your Disney night. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Oh, boy.
So, we'll post that as soon as we get the list. We're going to have some awesome prizes, some great fun. There's going to be plenty of comics to look at while you're in there, coffee, drinks, all over the place. So head on down there if you're in Sacramento, December 9th, 6 o'clock, mark your calendars. Yeah. So, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Amy.
Class dismissed.